Right. Hey, everybody. Hope you had a great week. It was kind of a weird week. While you guys were living in the ice, I was actually stuck in Boston trying to get home. I flew out as the ice was coming, and I tried to get home, but I got home late Thursday, so that was good. But it was kind of weird. You go to Boston in the winter, you think you're going to have trouble getting out of Boston, not necessarily getting back to Dallas. And I think half the people in the hotel I was in, I moved to a hotel near the Logan Airport. I think half the people there were trying to get back to Texas in some form or fashion. So anyway, all good. We made it. We survived. Hope nobody had any, as Aaron and I were talking, post-COVID syndrome or flashbacks, right? Kids are home all day. Right? Yeah. So anyway, but it's all good. All good. Well, today we are going to talk about God's loyal love. So, if you remember, right, we've been focused on Exodus 34, 6 and 7. Yahweh, a God compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, which we learned last week is long in the nose. Go figure. It's a figure of speech, right? Overflowing with loyal love and faithfulness. He maintains loyal love for thousands, forgiving iniquity, transgression, and sin, yet he won't declare innocent the guilty. He will bring the iniquities of the fathers upon the children and grandchildren to the third and the fourth. And as I've shared with you all before, right, this is all coming from the Bible Project. They have a Character of God series. I would highly encourage you to take a look at it. I think these guys are pretty impressive with all of the resources they have. It's been a great thing for Lisa and I to really dig into that. So let's watch the video, and then we will talk about it. Here we go.
If you tried to describe what God is like, it could be difficult or daunting. But when the people who wrote the Bible, they consistently describe God's character.
Right, great resources.
I had it all tied. Well, anyway, never mind. Hold on just a second. Let me try to remember. What am I doing here? Okay, you stop. Okay, where am I? Just a second.
I could hear it before, but I couldn't see it. Now I can't hear it or see it.
Thanks, Chuck. All right, let's try this again. I'll back it up. Man, you'd think by now I'd have this down.
If you tried to describe what God is like, it could be old or daunting. But when the people who wrote the Bible pondered the mystery of God, they consistently describe God's character compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, overflowing with loyal love and faithfulness. We're going to look at this fourth phrase, loyal love. It translates the Hebrew word chesed, which is hard to translate into any language, because it combines the ideas of love, generosity, and enduring commitment all into one. Chesed describes an act of promise-keeping loyalty that is motivated by deep personal care. Like in the story of Ruth, Ruth is a foreigner married to an Israelite man, but tragically, her husband dies along with his brother and his father. All Ruth has left is her widowed mother-in-law, Naomi, who has nothing to give her. Naomi tells Ruth she should go back to her people, but instead, Ruth promises to stay by Naomi's side and take care of her. And as other people watch Ruth keep this promise over time, they call it an act of chesed. Notice that Ruth's chesed is not conditional or based on Naomi's worth. Rather, it's an expression of Ruth's character. She just is a generous and loving person who keeps her word. That's chesed. Now, Ruth's loyal love is truly inspiring, but the one who shows the most enduring chesed in the Bible is God. Like in the story about Jacob, who is a treacherous liar even to his own family. But despite that, God chooses him and repeats the promise he made to Jacob's grandfather, Abraham, that he would have a huge family through whom God would restore his blessing to the nations. And so 20 years later, when Jacob realizes how undeserving he is, he says to God, "I'm not worthy of all the chesed you've shown me." And he's right. But God's chesed was never about Jacob's worth in the first place. It's a display of God's generous loyalty to his promise. God's chesed continues into the story of Jacob's descendants, the Israelites, When they're enslaved by Pharaoh in Egypt, we're told that God remembered his promise to Abraham and Jacob, so God defeats Egypt and raises up Moses to liberate the people and lead them into the promised land. And in the story, this is called an act of chesed, because it was about God keeping his word. Now, on their way to the promised land, the Israelites are scared of the nations around them, and they doubt that God can protect them. So the people threaten to kill Moses and appoint a new leader to take them back to Egypt. God is understandably hurt and angry, but Moses steps in and says, "Forgive the sin of these people because of your great chesed." Notice that Moses asks God to forgive not because the people deserve it, but because it's consistent with God's own character. And God agrees, and he recommits himself to a people that don't want to be committed to him. In the Bible, God is loyal and loving for no other reason than it's just who God is. Of course he wants his people to respond with chesed in return, but even when they don't, God's chesed remains. The prophet Hosea compared Israel's chesed to a morning mist that's here one moment, gone the next. But God's chesed is enduring. Like in the celebration of Psalm 136 that opens by saying, "Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good," and then 26 times repeats, "His chesed is forever." And so, after centuries of Israel betraying their commitment to God, and after humanity's long history of violence and death, God still kept his promise in a dramatic and drastic way by becoming human and binding himself to us in the person of Jesus. And the people who followed Jesus of Nazareth said that in him they encountered the God of Israel, who is full of loyal love and faithfulness. Jesus is the ultimate loyal and loving human. And in his life, death, and resurrection, God opened up a new future for all of us and for all of creation. And God did this because it's just who God is, generous, loving, and eternally loyal to his promises. And when we experience the purity and power of God's loyal love shown through Jesus, it compels us to reimagine why and how we can show chesed back to God and to the people around us. This is what it means to say that God is overflowing.
So I'm curious, and if you could, anybody want to, depending on the different translations that we've got, I am curious if what you have for loyal love in your different translations. Because as he said, right, hesed is a hard word to translate into any language. So that would be, I'm curious, if anybody just, yes, Barb.
Well, the Psalm 136 is loving kindness.
Loving kindness, okay.
Abounding in love.
Say that again?
Abounding
in love.
Steadfast love.
Steadfast love. Okay.
Abounding
yes.
in loving kindness.
Okay. Yeah, right. So it is this one of these words, right, that we don't really have. And so, but once again, right, the idea, and if you remember, just kind of backing up for a second, this is all, this occurs, this verse occurs, Exodus 34, 6 and 7. God is showing Moses his glory, right? And as he's doing that, he is describing his characters, his characteristics, sorry. And so thus, once again, right? Today, we're looking at loyal love. Next week, we will look at faithfulness. So just some data, if you want, right? Hesed is actually used 245 times. In the Hebrew Bible. That's what Mackie likes to call the Old Testament. It's his thing. 127 times in Psalms, 46 times between Genesis and 2 Kings, 26 times in the Prophet, and then 13 times in wisdom literature. For those of you that like stats, that's more for Nathan than anybody else, I think. So. It is interesting, though. There's various translations out there. So back in the Wycliffe and Tyndale days, they translated it mercy. I thought that was strange. I'm not sure. I don't know. And maybe I don't fully understand or grasp the definition of mercy. But That's a hard one for me to understand. Somebody already mentioned, right, loving kindness, which is the King James or NASB, but they too also use mercy from time to time. Steadfast love, I think one of you mentioned that, and then unfailing love or just love, right? And it is one of those where even, and we won't get into this today, but this is once again, there isn't a direct translation into Greek on this word, right? So you don't necessarily have this word in the New Testament per se. It's mostly an Old Testament word. Yes?
Just back to your comment, since it was saying, you know, it's not based on our performance, but based on his character.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy is not getting what we deserve. And that would be motivated by his character.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, I see where you're going.
So his action towards us is not based on our deserving the, you know, judgment and
right.
You know, all that. It's mercy.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's based on his character.
And I think that also, we'll later see the word generosity comes into play. I think, Andrea, you got a good point there. I get that. Okay. So, when we look at some of these, right, you've got kind of a basic definition, right? It assumes, Hesed assumes, in most cases, a pre-existing relationship, and it refers to actions that demonstrate loyalty to that relationship to preserve, protect, and make it flourish. It does not refer to any one specific type of action. Rather, it describes a posture in the relationship that can be expressed through many different acts. So it's almost, I look at it as more the attitude or the approach, not necessarily the outcome, right? Not necessarily the act of what happens. So a couple of verses that I'll read to you guys. So Genesis 47 is where Jacob, this one was interesting to me. This is where Jacob's sons are burying their father. So this is where Jacob is asking Joseph to commit to taking him after he's dead hundreds of miles to bury him with his ancestors, right? So, I mean, there's nothing in this for Joseph at all if you think about it, right? So Jacob lived in Egypt 17 years, and the years of his life were 147. When the time drew near for Israel to die, or Jacob to die, he called for his son Joseph and said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, put your hand under my thigh and promise that you will show me hesed and faithfulness. Do not bury me in Egypt, but when I rest with my fathers, carry me out of Egypt and bury me where they are buried. I will do as you say," Joseph replies. So it's this attitude, right? It's this commitment that Joseph is making to his father, Jacob, right? Once again, an example of that word hesed, right? He's got a love, there's a love and an affection for him. But then also think about this. That wasn't an easy task. That's a long way to go at that time to take care of somebody who's already dead. He's not going to know, right? Kind of the way I look at it. Anyway, another one, 2 Samuel. So David, right, and Jonathan were best friends. Jonathan is the son of Saul, right? So here's David wanting to show hesed to Jonathan and really hit Jonathan's offspring, right? Jonathan's son. So 2 Samuel, David says, "Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show hesed for Jonathan's sake? Now there was a servant of Saul's household named Ziba. They summoned him to appear before David, and the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' 'At your service,' he replied. The king asked, 'Is there no one still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show the hesed of God?' Ziba answered, 'There is still the son of Jonathan. He is lame in both feet.'" A whole different ballgame, right? You're taking something else on. "So King David had him brought from Lodabar when," I can't say that name, "son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David. He bowed down to pay him honor. David said to Mephibosheth, I'm just going to leave it at that. At your service, don't be afraid, David said to him, for I will surely show you hesed. For the sake of your father Jonathan, I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. Once again, didn't need to do this, went above and beyond, right? So it just kind of shows that generosity, that love, that commitment for his, and really this is a commitment to Jonathan's offspring as a result of his relationship with Jonathan, right? There's a deep sense of loyalty and love, and, you know, that's kind of where this word is headed. And last one is Joshua 2, where the spies, so this one's interesting, because there isn't an existing relationship with this one, right? The spies are talking to Rahab, right? And making a deal with her so that she would protect them, and they make this deal. So it's interesting to me that the loyalty does not have to be this long relationship, right? So it's another way to look at it. So now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show hesed, this is Rahab, to my family, because I have shown hesed to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death, our lives for your lives. The men assured her, if you don't tell me, or if you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you with hesed and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house that she lived in was part of the city wall. Right? So once again, not a deep relationship, but they were both kind of showing hesed. Sorry, Chuck, I know I'm probably not saying that right. Hesed. Is that right?
I think that's enough. We got it.
Is that enough? This is the splash. Yeah, right, exactly. It's like going to SeaWorld, right? In the splash zone, right. Very good. So those are some examples of humans showing hesed in the Bible. But remember, 75% of the time that hesed is mentioned, it's actually referring to God's hesed, right? And so when we think about God's hesed and his people, you think about a couple of different examples here where Genesis 24, God shows hesed by providing a marriage partner to Isaac, ensuring the future of Abraham's family. This is the situation where, you know, God has made this commitment and promise to Abraham. But Isaac has no wife. He needs to go find a wife. He sends a servant to go back to Abraham's original place, right? His family, to look for a wife. What happens? The servant prays. God shows hesed. Then the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master and set out with a variety of good things on his master of his master in his hand. Whoopsie. Sorry. I know you guys can't see this, but I can. Wow, I just completely blew that. Here we go. Master's hand. And he rose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. He made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. He said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show hesed to my master Abraham. Behold, I am standing by the spring, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now may it be that the girl to whom I say, please let down your jar so that I may drink, and who answers, drink, and I will water your camels also, may she be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. By this I will know you have shown hesed to my master. Numbers 14, God forgives Israel for rebelling in the account of the spies as an act of hesed in response to Moses' request. So now remember, they've been in Mount, you know, they're at Mount Sinai, right? They sat there for a year. They got all ready. They go to the promised land. They send in the spies. The spies come back and say, wow, amazing place. Oh, but you should see these giants. They're going to kill us. Right? And what do the Israelites do? We're not going. Right? God gets frustrated. We saw that earlier, right, when we talked about this a few weeks ago. Moses steps in. Right? Moses steps in. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people spurn me? How long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will strike them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they." But Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear of it, for by your strength you brought up this people from the midst, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people. For you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye, while your cloud stands over them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you slay this people as one man, then the nations who have heard of your fame will say, 'Because the Lord cannot bring this people into the land which he promised them by oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness.' But now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger and abundant in hesed, forgiving iniquity and transgression, but he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and the fourth generations. Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your hesed, just as you have also forgiven this people from Egypt even until now." So once again, this was not deserving, right? The Israelites didn't do anything to deserve this. Moses is interceding again, right, in the way, but he's reminding God of his character. You're hesed, right? That's why you need to do this. And what does God do? He does, right? And then last one, 2 Samuel, because of his promise to David, God remains committed to David's family forever. And to me, I read this is God's commitment to bring Jesus through the line of David, right? So 2 Samuel, Yahweh said to David, "When your days are complete and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your seed after you, who will come forth from you, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be a father to him, and he will be a son to me. When he commits iniquity, I will correct him with the rod of men and the strokes of the sons of men, but my hesed still shall not depart from him. As I took it away from Saul, whom I removed from before you, your house and your kingdom shall endure before me forever. Your throne shall be established forever." So, now, what does it mean that Jesus, really, at the end of the day, is the embodiment of God's hesed? It's God's ultimate act of hesed, his loyalty to his covenants, both made to Abraham, Noah, and David. They're all embodied in Jesus. Jesus came to receive and show God's hesed and to restore the partnership between God and humanity. And Matthew does an interesting thing here where he compares Exodus 25, as well as 32 through 34, with John 1:14. So let's take a look at that for a second. So in John 1:14, right, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Exodus 25, "Have them make a sanctuary for me that I may dwell among them, according to all that I am going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle," right? And the pattern of all its furniture. So once again, Jesus became the flesh. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, just like the Israelites built the tabernacle from that perspective. "We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father." Once again, God going through and showing his glory to Moses, where he said, "You cannot see my face, for no one will see me and live." Then the Lord said, "There is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed." Right? But then, once again, Jesus becomes the embodiment of that hesed. Right? He comes on earth. And then last but not least, full of grace and truth. And as we've already seen in Exodus 34, Yahweh, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and full of covenant love and truth. So, when I look back on this, these were the kind of three words that I noticed One was affection, right? We hear this love. We hear there's an element of love, deep feeling in this word chesed. You also have this commitment. And once again, it may or may not be an enduring commitment. It may not be a long-term commitment, but it is a commitment one way or the other, right? There's an endurance element to it. And then last but not least, I think where Andrea was going as well, is this generosity. Giving more than what, well, number one, that's deserved, but then even going beyond that, right? So that those are the three words that I took away from this, from that perspective. Okay, so. Uh-oh. What happened? Okay, so questions. Look up when you're in your groups. Titus 3, 4 through 7 gives us a good picture of God's loyal love at work in our world. In this passage, what does it look like when God's loving character appears? In question 2, should we actually be showing chesed to God? And are there areas of your life that you do show God chesed? And are there areas that you don't? And why? Reminder, we got to be out by 10:15. Okay? So I'm going to break you at 10:10, and then you got 5 minutes to mingle your way out the door. Okay? All right. Well, let's circle up and do our deal.